Hello and welcome to the Fitness Mindset Podcast with Kate Newdecker. Today I am joined by someone I've actually known for a few years via social media. But the funny thing is about social media, you can follow someone for a while, but you kind of feel like you actually know them really well. So over this time, this person's page has completely blown up out of proportion, but they've stayed really true to their values. So today I'm joined by someone called Kashira Whiteley. So hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. I'm really excited to be on the podcast. It is true, we've known each other for what, 4 years probably? We followed each other on social media. I was like making fitness memes back then, so... I don't know how I ended up here, but here I am.
It's funny how it happens, isn't it? Like, you just, one day you're making fitness memes, and the next day you're coaching people.
You're bothering people on the internet.
And this. Also this. But, I mean, obviously, that there's so many different elements to your social media platform. And I think one of the things the listeners are going to find really interesting is that you've detailed your journey of chronic fatigue syndrome. And obviously, there's probably people who don't really know what that is or what it means. So what would you say that, how would you define to you what chronic fatigue is?
For me personally, like, chronic fatigue is my diagnosis, but I just don't really buy it. Like, I don't think that's an illness. I think it's a massive cop-out. It's become a huge umbrella term for a lot of different issues. You know, it's like you'll meet people with chronic fatigue syndrome, different symptoms to one another. And it's... I find it, like, I always talk about having a chronic illness. I rarely... I do say chronic fatigue, but... it's not like something I talk about as much with like the actual diagnosis. Like, if you're actually overexhausted, I've always felt that like chronic fatigue, if you have like overworked yourself or you partied too hard or whatever, and you spend like a month or something afterwards where your defenses are just really low and you're overexhausted, your body needs a bit of recovery, I think, fair enough, a diagnosis of chronic fatigue may be valid in that situation if within a month or so you're back to normal. I've been sick for 14 years, and I just simply don't believe that there isn't a deeper causation behind the fatigue that I experience. I also hate the term chronic fatigue because it so, like, minimalizes. Firstly, like, people overuse the word fatigue and think that it means tired, and it's not the same as being tired. Being fatigued is not the same as being tired. Fatigue is an ongoing exhaustion that is not relieved by rest or sleep. Like, there's nothing that you can do to recoup from fatigue. I can sleep for 14 hours straight and will wake up like I've been hit by a bus. You know, And that's just that probably like my most minor symptom. The fact that I get tired is like my most minor symptom. I have like severe issues with my digestive system. I used to vomit after every single meal, which is actually what initially triggered like my eating disorder. I ended up becoming bulimic because I developed such anxiety around food. And almost like a real familiarity with vomiting. And I also experience like a lot of pain in my joints, in my muscles. I get swelling in my joints and my muscles when I'm really bad. And I used to suffer from migraines. I was bedbound for 3 months. I couldn't walk. I do get depressed when I'm ill. Like, I feel like it affects my hormones. My thyroid's underactive. It's like, it's a whole mess of things. Yes. Not to mention that I have other like symptoms that have developed over time that like are totally random. You know, like I get heat rash. I grew up in Spain. I never had heat rash throughout my whole childhood. It'd be like 50 degrees heat and I'd never had a heat rash. When I was about 22, no, younger, probably about 20, I suddenly developed heat rash. Started getting heat rash in the summer. And I get it. It's not to do with the sun. It's literally like I get it now when I'm training.
Yeah,
I just come in a rush in my chest and my face. And so it's like loads of little random things that you just don't even like necessarily pay attention to. Issues like with the enamel on my teeth, my hair growth like varies massively depending on my health, my nails, like the stress, like totally random things that maybe aren't even important, but it's so complex. And I think that chronic fatigue syndrome is just a bit, it doesn't really do it justice.
I didn't know any of those things, because as much as you document, obviously, your story on social media, you never complain. So it's like, I know you obviously wouldn't want to, you wouldn't want to talk about these things. But the thing is, it's important for people to know that it's almost all encompassing, the symptoms that happen. And probably they're all very individual to different people. So yeah. So I think it's very, very brave of you for sharing that. So yeah, thank you. I think it's going to help people understand it a lot more. And I think when people know about something, they're going to be less judgmental about these things. And I think that's ideal.
It's hard because it is like, chronic illnesses are hugely misunderstood, especially invisible illnesses. We also have a natural like predisposition to be uncomfortable with illness.
Yeah.
And that goes part like that's a societal structure that is rooted very much in instincts. You know, it's like, you know, we don't want to be around sickness because instinctually, even though logically we know that things like chronic fatigue syndrome or like, you know, illnesses like that you can't catch them, but on an instinctual level, you don't want to be near sickness in case it makes you sick, you know, and that's like, you are fighting against something quite primal that has now become like a real social norm. And there is a real lack of understanding when it comes to chronic illness, and it can be very hard to talk about. People find it uncomfortable, and when people find something uncomfortable, they would often much rather deny its existence, if that's possible, which it is when it's a chronic illness, then learn more about it. You know, that takes harder work, and it means taking time to sit in that uncomfortable space, to be able to learn more and overcome it. So I think you get shut down a lot, and you followed me for a long time. I didn't used to really talk about my chronic illness very much at all. Especially when I was competing, I kind of had this mentality where I didn't want it to define me. And I definitely, like, I never wanted it to be like I was complaining or victimizing myself, or that I felt sorry for myself, or I wanted other people to feel sorry for me. Having a chronic illness is hard, but don't get me wrong, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, it's changed my life. And like, the whole idea of not wanting it to define me is ludicrous, because of course it has defined me. It's been like, probably the most defining experience in my life, and I wouldn't be on the path that I'm on without it. I don't know where I'd be. Honestly, I don't know where I'd be. But where I was in my teenage life and who I was in my teenage life and my relationship with myself in my teenage life, wasn't a happy one, and it wasn't a positive place that I was in. And if I'd never got sick, I don't know if I would have done the work on myself to pull myself out of that hole. I feel like the point where I got sick, I was on a crossroads.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was either going to go down really deeply into that lifestyle of like drugs and self-harm and just like self-destruction and underachievement, or I was going to really work. Sorry, I don't know. Can I swear?
Yes, you can. Totally, you can totally swear. Absolutely.
It was like, I need to like fucking pull my socks up, do the work, and like pull it together, make something of my life. Like, now is the moment where you're choosing which direction it is that you're going in. And that decision was almost made for me when I got sick, because it was like, okay, well, you're gonna end up in a wheelchair, or you're gonna do the work. And I did the work.
There's no two ways about it, and I think that's. It's just, I know obviously there's a lot of cheese around social media about people being inspiring and that kind of thing, but I think that is actually truly inspiring for people, because I think everyone has their stuff. Everyone has their stuff going on. But when you hear that someone has had an illness of that kind, not let it hold them back in any shape or form, and actually use it as a strength,
use it as something that is positive in their life and is actually like gearing you to change other people's lives. And I think that's, it is inspiring. That's genuinely inspiring. And obviously as I touched on earlier, your social media influence literally blew up to like 500,000. And usually people might use that influence to maybe sell products or sell brands for companies, because I think a lot of influencers feel that pressure to go down that route, but instead you use it as a platform to spread awareness about this as well. So what other benefits have you seen from having so much like influence on social media?
When my social media blew up, like I was personal training, I didn't really, like, because it blew up so randomly out of nowhere, after I did a viral video, it wasn't like I was a budding influencer or blogger or anything like that. Like, I didn't really understand any of the business side of it at all. Initially, like, it was just quite a terrifying experience. Like, it was exciting, it was really cool. But it was like, oh my God, like it was my safe space, you know, like I used to share like just my gym progress. I hadn't been training for that long. I was like enjoying my beginner gains and just like totally, like I look back now and a lot of the stuff that I used to post like in regards to like training and food was very like toxic and dysfunctional. It was real gym bro era of like being totally like, you're like, this is like whole lifestyle, bro, and you're either like about it or you're like not. Like, you might as well bother. And I was a total gym bro, and I was like macros to the T and very like obsessive in my food habits. And I don't know, I've gone off.
No, yeah, but like you're saying that basically you started it off as something completely different. You got a load of influence overnight and it was like, whoa.
Yeah, like, it was suddenly like, suddenly the things that I said had like meaning. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of like a diary before, and I'd share stuff that wasn't necessarily like positive, but it was the mind place that I was in. Like, I feel like I've always been very, very honest on my page. It's always been somewhere where I'm 100% authentic. Mm-hmm. And I've had like the separation and anonymity that comes with the internet to just be like completely unfiltered. But when, after it blew up, it was like suddenly like anything I say like has like relevance, like it has any kind of, before I saw my page as me and it was just my space. And then I kind of had like a couple of bystanders that like maybe poked their head in and just saw what was going on. Do you know what I mean? I didn't feel that sense of people are reading this or people are, it was very much for me that I was posting. And then when my page blew up, it was like, how do I maintain this being something that has been really like sacred to me and it is like my diary? Do you know, it is my experience in the world. How do I maintain that relationship with it while also providing value to others and like sort of honoring the fact that there's thousands, like hundreds of thousands of people like turning up on my page. I don't know, like there's something in that, like however it happened, like it was a fluke, it happened through a viral video, but ultimately like I have to trust that it happened for a reason and I have to make the most of it. Like, I can't just be like, oh, well, I don't deserve it, so I'm going to delete my Instagram account. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've got to try and, like, make something out of it. It was quite, like, finding my feet, and that was quite challenging initially. Like, I feel like I'm kind of there now, but it was really tough to sort of know, who am I? I was, like, 22. Yeah. I was like, who am I? And I was like totally in a place in my life where it was the year that my Instagram account blew up, like I'd like gone through a breakup, I'd lost my house, I'd left my job. I was like, so like my life, everything in my life was like, who am I? What am I doing? Yeah. And then like my social media blew up in the middle of it and I was just like, oh my God, who am I? Now I've got to tell like 1,000 people who I am and I don't even know who I am. Like, what do I even do with this? It was a wild experience. I mean, again, like I wouldn't change it for anything, but like it was, I think like people romanticize the idea of, like, I don't know, being an influencer or being, like, known or having any kind of influence in the world or, like, I don't know, even, like, fame. And I would not, like, use that word to describe myself at all. Like, I'm definitely not famous. But I think people, like, think that they're going to gain, like, this, yeah, this fame or whatever, like, through social media. And it's, like, it's not going to bring you anything that you don't, like, work for. Do you know, it's not like this sudden ticket to, like, happiness or success or any of those things. It's just, like, you just have more eyes on you. That's really, like, that's really it. And then the rest is what you make it.
Absolutely. And I think as well, I think I saw a post the other day and you said about enjoying the process of it as well, like, enjoying the process of creating content. And I think that's obviously, that, like, shows quite well with you, and that you do actually genuinely enjoy essentially blogging and putting out content. And I think that's a large part of it.
What I really enjoy is, like, connection. Like, I enjoy human connection. Like, I'm sort of, I guess, more known on social media for, like, fitness, and I am a personal trainer, but my real passion and the sort of core of the work that I do, even in personal training, is very much in personal development. And I think that, again, like, that filters through social media. It's like that being able to connect, it's just connecting to more people on a larger scale. And that is for me, that's, like, where the passion is. That's where it's, like, touching real people, touching real lives, having real people touch my life, do you know, which it is, like, it goes both ways. My followers, like, can be so inspiring and so motivating, and it's humbling when people share their stories with you. Do you know, I've had people talk to me about their struggles with addiction. I struggled with addiction during my teenage years. I've had people talk to me about depression, about being suicidal. I've had people come to me with relationship advice, but whatever. And for whatever reason, I that makes me feel I'm doing something right, because here are these people that don't know me.
Yeah.
And feel that I'm a safe person that they can come and speak to about what's going on for them, and that I'm going to be able to listen and support them and give them any kind of guidance through it, or just be there, you know, just be there for, like, to be in that experience with them is an honor. And that for me, that is definitely, like, and it is, it's like I was talking about it on my story yesterday, and I quoted Gary Vee, who says, the key, I think it's something like, the key to happiness is being in love with the process, or something like that. And it's like, it's true. It's, that is, you need to find the love. You need to find the thing that you love, and run with it. And then you're already living the dream, and you're already doing what you're supposed to be doing. All the sort of end goal things that we tell ourselves that we need or that we want, like, you know, wealth or early retirement or, like, flashy cars or whatever it may be for the individual, listening, all of those things are the bonus. They're not that, they're not the love, do you know?
Yeah,
that's the bonus that you have to, that you can potentially create through love. But success is not, it's not just money. Number one, and money does not equal success. If you are rich but miserable, you wasted your time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really that simple, at least in my eyes, I feel like. And there's nothing wrong with doing something that you love and being rich. Being rich is not a waste of time, but sacrificing your happiness, your joy, your freedom, your integrity, your ethics for money, it's not a fair trade-off. It's not a decent trade-off. So I think you do have to find the thing that you love, and that the process of getting to the end, to the end goal, to the big picture at the end, is the thing that sets your soul on fire every single day. Else you're going to just waste 40 years of your life doing something that
I think makes, a really good analogy that you could probably compare to a lot of different things. I mean, in particular, this brings to mind, you did bodybuilding competitions. So obviously that is very much to do with, I mean, you really got to like the process of doing a bodybuilding competition and doing prep. Would you say that you enjoyed the process of doing
competing? I love prep. Yeah. Like, I love prep. I did not have any of the negative, like, experiences that people talk about in terms of prep. I did not lose strength. I was, if anything, I feel like I had more energy. I was, like, I loved it. I had so much fun. I loved my training. I didn't care about the restrictive diet. Like, it really didn't, like, faze me. I just went into, like, a total zone of just being in it. I do genuinely, like, now I'm not dieting, I'm not tracking, I eat pretty healthy. That's, like, just my preferred eating style anyway, because I, like, you feel better when you eat whole foods, you know, you feel better in your body, and that's, like, that's important to me. I loved prep. I would, like, absolutely, like, I went to train with one of my friends, Tanya, in my peak week, like, I remember, and we went to the Muscle Works in Bethnal Green. And Tanya's a competitor, a way more successful competitor than me. And she's incredible. She's just absolutely gorgeous inside and out. And she, like, she was off season. And I was, like, lifting. I was still, like, lifting heavier than she was on my peak week. Like, I was so strong. I was stronger in my peak week than I am now.
Yeah.
Like, 100%, 100%. For me, it was rebound was awful. Like, rebound was hellish. Like, prep was awesome. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I just really need to, like, I needed to take a minute to catch my breath and really, like, go back and look at, like, where I fucked up in the coming out of competition and the coming out of prep, so that I can avoid that sort of real damage to my hormones and my health on the way back up. But prep itself was bomb, and like, if you don't love it, don't do it. Like, it's honestly, like, it's the bodybuilding. I'm probably going to piss people off saying this. Bodybuilding is the stupidest sport in the whole fucking world. It is so dumb. Like, it is the most useless sport. It is a beauty pageant with muscles. That's all you're doing. You're just prancing around on a stage. There is nothing really to it. All the work goes in before the day. It's not actually a sport. It's a pageant. Like... I'm sorry, like, it isn't. Like, it's not like powerlifting or Olympic lifting where you go out and you perform your sport. Like, you're just showcasing your body. The work all happens in your own time. And, like, unless you're planning to go on to, like, Olympia or anything like that, it's financially not viable. It costs a lot of money. You don't really get anything back. Like, you can't predict, like, whether you're going to place or not. Like, it's even... I've been to so many shows. Like, I know why I didn't place. Like, I'm not saying this because I'm butthurt, like, at all. Like, I didn't deserve to place when I competed. And I'm totally at peace with that. Like, my legs weren't as lean. I had done no posing practice whatsoever when I went on stage. Like, for me, it really was just, like, it was a bucket list thing that I wanted to do, to go from being bedbound to standing on a bodybuilding stage. Like, that was, for me, it was a really therapeutic, cathartic experience in re-owning, like, my body and my power. Winning was never, like, it was never the real goal for me in it, do you know? But I have watched other people that are, like, serious. Like, I'm not a career bodybuilder. Like, fitness is my career. Fitness and personal development is my career, but I'm not a career bodybuilder. I will never be a career bodybuilder. And I've been to so many shows where I've watched people that are career bodybuilders that pour their, like, their heart, their soul, their life into it, that don't go on holiday, that don't, like, spend any money on luxuries, because all of their money, all of their income just goes on to the next show. And, like, it's what their whole entire life revolves around. And I've watched them go up after, like just absolutely dedicating everything that they have to it, go up on a stage, and I'm sitting there going, like, they look the best and they don't even play.
Yeah.
You know, it's so hard to predict. Don't know what the coaches are looking for, because it varies so much show to show, day to day, what their mood is, what they feel like today, who they know. Like, it's political as well. Bodybuilding is extremely political. There aren't the same restrictions and, like, regulations in bodybuilding that there are in other sports. It's very common for judges to coach participants. It's very common for judges to date participants. It's also, it's a pretty small, like, it's a pretty small community. Bodybuilding is, like, you know, everybody knows each other, do you know? to an extent, or like there's like a very small degree of separation. So it's very common for judges to be friends with people on stage. But it's also like you have people that are highly involved in certain federations that also do posing practice, or like if you don't buy a bikini from a certain brand, you're less likely to place. If you don't get your makeup and tan done by the federation's tanning and makeup crew, you're less likely to place. It's like there's so many like variables. Like if you're not doing it for you, for the passion, for the love, because you want to stand up on that stage and best like be a better version physically of yourself, and you're not going to just compete against yourself each time, it's going to destroy you. It's like it is soul destroying. And I think that is one of the real difficulties in the bodybuilding industry, because there is unfortunately a high level of ego and a high level of disappointment, and the two are not a good combination. And there is some very like toxic aspects to the bodybuilding world in terms of competing, which I think stems from this ego disappointment clash, and yeah, it's ugly. Like there's a part of it that's very ugly, so you really have to be able to go in it like for you, about you, and in your own little bubble where you don't really let that side of it touch you. Do you know?
Absolutely, anything external cannot touch you at all. And I think the thing is, you do a lot of personal development. You've done a lot of mindset work on yourself since your last competition. Would you say, with that being said about bodybuilding, would you say that you're in a better position now mentally to compete again?
Oh, yeah, like, definitely. Like, everything is a learning experience. And I was also going into my first show, I was very much like, this is a learning experience. It wasn't like, I hadn't even been training for that long. I just qualified as a personal trainer. I still feel like I'm learning all the time. Like, fitness is something where you can learn. There's always more to learn. You can never, like, know it all. You can be, like, really good at what you do. But I think the minute that you think you know it all, it's a dangerous zone. Do you know? If you think you know it all, then you won't learn anything new. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just got to always stay open to, like, new information. I feel like I learned a lot about like my body, about training, about what works for me, about what doesn't. But I think I learned a lot about myself too. There was a lot of like stuff that came up last year, and competition prep was definitely a part of that I thought I'd like put to rest. Do you know, there was stuff like issues within myself that I thought like weren't issues anymore, like particularly when it comes to like disordered eating. Like I hadn't binged or purged that's a lie. I binged because I did like the whole cheat day thing when I was in my like play phase. I hadn't purged since I was about 19, 20. With my ex when I was 19. Yeah, 19. And when we moved in together, like I just like stopped. Like it was just totally like I didn't want him to be around that really. And I thought it was just done, but it wasn't done because I didn't work through it. I just stopped so that it wouldn't affect somebody else. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like as soon as like when I came out of like competition, I did like fall really heavily into binging. I was like totally out of control. That escalated. I started gaining weight really quickly. My hormones were a mess. I have a chronic illness, and that's like feeds into it too. And I did actually start purging again, and that was like the point where I was like, oh my god, I'm here. Yeah. How did this end, you know? So I think, I know that I'm not alone, you know? I know that this, like, coming out of competition and speaking to other women.
Totally. You're not alone.
People, they become very disordered. Even women, like, I had a background of disordered eating before competing, but I've spoken to women that had no background of disordered eating whatsoever and actually developed anorexia or bulimia or a combination of the two coming out from competition when they had no prior issues with it. So I think it's really important if you're going into this world, you need to be really fucking self-aware. Like, you need to really be able to look at your shit. It's self-awareness. Self-reflection is key, like, anyway, I think that's my belief. Obviously, I'm a coach. I'm a personal development coach. I'm an NLP practitioner. I believe that you need to know who the fuck you are if you're going to be pushing yourself to severe limits, both mentally and physically.
I think that's something really important for people to know, because obviously with social media, I mean, competing bodybuilding competitions is really glamorized. And I think people might be thinking about going into their first competition without knowing that these things do happen. And it's really important to make sure that you have a plan coming out of the competition, making sure that you've got your coach to coach you out of those nutritional plans that you had in the run-up to the event. So
somebody that's there to support you mentally, that doesn't just have the practical information of how to reverse diet or how to do whatever, which I didn't do actually. I didn't reverse diet. I didn't I just totally started binging and did not stop. But not just having somebody that's gonna practically get you through reverse dieting, and also your lifts and stuff. It's so dangerous to come out from competition and just go, right, well, I've had food now, and go straight into really heavy lifts and things like that, because your body's so fatigued and so all over the place. Your hormone levels will be knocked to some extent if you're prepping, if you're dieting for a prolonged period of time. It's really important to give your body some time to level and build up with your training, just as you do with your calories. But I think you also need that mental support, and that sort of, I wish that I had been more aware of how tough rebound was, because I was so focused with a background in disordered eating. I was so focused during my prep on being mentally healthy, and I was really open with my coach, and whenever I had dips in feeling I feel I'm going into my mad zone, I just talk about it and air it and be open with it, and I'd really sit with it, and I feel I did a really good job getting through a really healthy prep and my body, because I was not tired, I wasn't grumpy, I wasn't weak. I get brain fog as well because of chronic fatigue syndrome, and I'd say if anything, I was sharper mentally. It was a really great experience for me, and I felt amazing. It was the rebound that it didn't even occur to me. I was cool, when I'm done, that's going to be great. I'm just going to be able to eat again. It's going to be whatever. Yeah. It just didn't even occur to me that was going to be hard. Mm-hmm. And it hit me a truck, man.
Yeah. You weren't to know, and it was your first competition. Like you said, it was a learning process.
I feel for anybody listening that's considering prep, to just go in, I think there's so much, I see a lot on social media of people being bodybuilding everything, and you've got to do it all this way, no balance, total restriction, this, and then I see a flip side of people that have come out of that and then been this world is shit, and I hate it, and don't compete, or just go really anti bodybuilding. And I don't feel I'm either of those. I don't think I'm either of those things. If you want to do a bodybuilding competition, there's no two ways. I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. It is not healthy. You need to be highly restrictive. It is not a long term. It's not something that you can do long term or maintain long term. You're pushing your body to unnatural boundaries. Your body is going to fight against you. Your body doesn't understand that you're doing a bodybuilding competition. Your body thinks that you're starving and overexerted. It's going to assume that we are in danger. It is going to change the hormonal responses going on in your body. It's going to change everything, but how you feel, how hungry you are, how lethargic you are, etc. It's it all happens for a reason. It's tough on your, it's a toll on your body, and it's a toll on your mind. It's highly isolating when being on competition prep. Goodbye to your social life, and half of your friends are not going to get, if not more, are not going to understand what the fuck you're doing. They're not going to get it. They're not going to see your vision. You need to prepare yourself. This is all true. On the flip side, it's one of the best things I've ever done in my life. It's one of the most satisfying processes I've ever gone through. I think I would do it again in a heartbeat, as long as I knew that I wasn't risking my health. I have so much admiration for people that are on the high level pro bodybuilders that I will never be. I will never be, like I say, I will never be a career bodybuilder, but I rate it, you know. It's a work ethic like no other, do you know? And yeah, so I think it, like anything in this world, the energy that you go into it with is gonna be how it plays out.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like, and as long as you can keep that positivity within yourself and bubble yourself up in it, and not let that outside impact, like, I would recommend doing a bodybuilding show if it's something that you're interested in doing. I just think be realistic about what you're expecting and what you're like, what you're going up against.
Yeah.
But 100% like would do it again. Yeah.
And I think something to be said as well, get a specialist coach that does prep specifically for bodybuilding competitions, because I think there's personally I wouldn't coach someone into a bodybuilding competition because it's something I don't have experience in myself.
I've been asked like several times, even like through social media, but like personally as well, like in gyms where people have seen like my clients, they've come and asked me about show prep. And after I competed, I had a couple of people ask me to prep them, and I was like, oh no honey, that's not me. I'm not a prep coach. A prep coach, and I would compete again. I would feel like fairly comfortable, and I think I would still get a coach again next time I compete. I would feel fairly comfortable now, like fairly confident now, like prepping myself for a show. I think that I could do that. I didn't feel that when I competed the first time. I really felt that I needed a coach. I don't really feel that anymore. I think I could prep myself. I think I would opt for a coach because I do think it makes a big difference. But there is no way that I would prep someone else. And I also have absolutely no intention of ever becoming a prep coach either.
Yeah.
Like, again, really admire it. I think it's a hardcore job. Like, you've got to really know your shit to a next level. Like, I feel not to like toot my own trumpet, but I feel like I'm a really good personal trainer. It's not the same thing. Like, it is not the same thing.
Yeah.
And it is a higher level. Like, mm-hmm. I would go for somebody that is really like highly qualified, like highly,
has a lot, you know, of that experience.
Has some like degree in, I mean, I'm not like, I don't think degrees are everything. I don't have a degree, but somebody that like really spent years, that's either been like working in this industry for years, that has prepped people for years, or that has some kind of high level qualification in nutrition or sports science. I say the qualification thing because I guess it's the easiest thing to like just tick off box. I don't care about qualification that much. I have my personal training qualification because it's just a tick, isn't it? Do you know that, like, you can do it, but
level qualification.
I feel that I learned anything on my personal training course that I didn't already know, and everything beyond it has been through my own work. I don't have a degree. I don't have any degree in sports science or anything else. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but there's something to be said as well. I mean, obviously qualifications are very important, fantastic, but it's really actually gaining experience coaching people. And obviously that's something that you can't necessarily put down on a piece of paper and say, oh, I've coached this many people. But essentially it is that experience and being coaching people on the gym floor and being one-on-one with people, which helps you to help more people. So I mean,
something like going into like your first show, like, you really got to understand that everybody's body is different and responds differently. So no matter how seasoned your coach is, they don't know your body yet. You don't know how your body's going to react. If you set a date for your first competition and you're not ready yet, like, don't stress on it. Just pull it out. Push it out a bit longer. Keep, like, you know, pull it and drive forward, like, to the next date. And get to really know your body and what works for you, rather than like panicking and then like just drastically dropping calories or anything like that. Don't work with somebody that pressures you, and that makes you feel more stressed. Your coach is there to support you, to support your training, to support your nutrition, to support you mentally, to take stress away. to motivate you, yes, you know, if you need, like, if you need a bit of a kick up the ass and you need to pull your finger out, like, your coach is there to be real with you and to tell you, like, come on, wake up, like, do you want to do this or not? Like, are you wasting my time? You're wasting your time. Like, come on, let's go. But your coach is not there to say to you, like, oh, well, we've only got 3 weeks and you're looking too watery or blah, 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 you're not going to be ready in time. Like, it, that is not motivating. And actually, like, raising your stress is just going to raise your cortisol levels and it's not going to help you anyway. So, like, do find somebody that you vibe with that is really, like, on your, like, that works for you. Because you might find an amazing coach that is actually, like, shit hot and knows their stuff and has huge success in terms of their clients, but if their techniques and strategies don't mesh with your, like, map of the world, they're not going to work for you. It doesn't mean that they're shit and it doesn't mean that you're shit. It means that the combination doesn't work, and that's fine, you know. And again, like, take ego out of the equation. Like, sometimes not every client is for you, not every coach is going to be for you. Like, I've had it in personal training. I've had, like, meetings, but I always do with my face-to-face clients, I always do a free consultation before working with them to, like, to get to know them, to evaluate if I'm going to be the right choice for them. I had, like, an absolutely amazing young man who was super lovely, like, super motivated, came and did a consultation with me, and he wanted to do running. And I was like, look, like, you seem super cool, I would love to work with you. I can put together a program for you. I can go away, do my research and learn about this and put a program together for you. But honestly, this is not my area of specialties. It's not my passion. And I can give you the information, but I will never, ever, ever be able to give you what a personal trainer who is passionate about this will give you. The fire that they will have is something that I'm not capable of. And I think, like, as much as you seem awesome and I'd love to work with you, I think you will get more from working from somebody else that specializes in this, you know, that does what you do. And, like, I think there's a lack of that ability to say, this is not my area, or, like, this is not my person, especially when money's involved, you know?
Yeah, and I think this is the thing with when you begin as a personal trainer, you're very much a general coach. And you train as many people as you can, you try to help as many people as you can, but only with experience and time you start to realize what your message is and who you want to train and who your main coaching client is. And I think that's the thing, it's working within your scope. So obviously if there's any sort of newer coaches who are going into personal training, it's definitely worth obviously getting your hours in on the gym floor, but working out what your key client is and what you need to deliver them. And it takes confidence to say that and say, look, I can't offer you the best service, however I know someone who can. And I think it's something that you only get with experience.
And I think, like on the flip side, when it comes to choosing your coach, that's really down again to your self-awareness. Like, know who you are before you embark on this, because it is hardcore. Like, know who you are, know what you need, know, like, already you need to not be stressing about the pitfalls, but you need to know where they could lie so that you can try to avoid them and you can work around them.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that comes across very much so with you as a coach is that you have a very strong emphasis on personal development and how much it affects people's nutrition and their fitness levels. So in terms of your coaching style, how would you say it affects people's results?
Well, I would actually definitely say that I am like a life coach before I am a personal trainer. Like, yeah. The work that I do is personal development work. I just do it in a gym setting. People turn up with, like, this focus on their physical appearance or their physical well-being. Like, I have clients that want to lose weight. Often it's the most common in our society, understandably. But I also have clients that want to gain weight. I've also had clients that just want to feel more healthy in their body. I have worked with people that have chronic illnesses or that have, like, ongoing health conditions quite a lot as well. But a lot of the time, like, when you get into the gym and you start doing the work, it becomes very quickly obvious that like the problems presenting physically are just the symptom of a larger problem. And we're so impatient by nature, human beings. We are so impatient by nature. We're so like a big picture driven, you know, we always, it's back to the process. It's back to like, you want to have like your dream body, or like be like really fit or be able to do muscle ups or whatever it is. Like you want that end goal, but you don't want to do the fucking work to do it. Like you need to fall in love with the process before that end goal has become something that you can maintain consistently, ongoingly, for the rest of your life. Else, what are you going to do? You're going to yo-yo diet, or you're going to become highly dependent on your personal trainer. I see it time and time again working in gyms. One of, like, a personal trainer's working with a client for 3 months. They do great. They make loads of progress. They lose the weight. They go on their holiday. They disappear for 6 months, and they come back to see the same personal trainer once again with exactly the same problems, and they've gained back all the weight that they've lost, you know? I think that's a waste of money. I think it's a waste of your time and it's a waste of your money. So the work that I do is very much on that root problem, like the root cause that is getting in the way of you achieving what you want to, not just in the gym, but in terms of like your well-being generally in life. And it often like really stems from self-esteem, and it really stems from like your own, your map of the world, but your own like identity. Mm-hmm. And everything that we say, like everything that we think about ourselves in our internal narrative that goes on 24/7, like whether we're listening to it or not, it's going on all the time. That is who we think we are.
Yeah.
So if my like whole, like if I'm talking to myself negatively all the time and I'm going, I'm lazy, I'm fat, or I'm unhealthy, or I'm unmotivated, or I don't have discipline, or I don't have the, like, whether it's positive or negative, this is now your identity, like, this is your self-identity, this is what you identify yourself to be. Changing that, even if it's a positive change, is difficult, it's uncomfortable, because who the fuck are you now if you're not all of these things, do you know? It's a real emotional process, and if you don't go through that emotional process and really get to the bottom of it and work all the way through the process, that client is going to be back in 6 months' time exactly where they started last time, and it's a waste of my time and it's a waste of their money. So I'm all about long term. I want my clients to go away to work with me for however long they might need to. Sometimes it's 3 months, sometimes 6 months, sometimes it's 2 years. However long they need to work with me, but then when they leave the gym and they stop working with me, they never need to come back. Yeah. And they now have a skill set and a lifestyle change that they take forward for the rest of their lives ongoingly. I haven't been a personal trainer for that long, but my first client, my first ever client, who stopped working with me 2 years ago now, he is still shredded. Like, he came to me, he was overweight, he was depressed, he had serious confidence issues, he was working a job that he hated in his dad's shop, not following like any of his aspirations or dreams, really low in himself, like, you know, by the time we stopped working together, lean, looked amazing, and he's like, we actually got to our working relationship where I said like you've got this, and he was sort of, no, I don't know if I'm ready yet. And we probably worked together like about 5 months in, and about 6 months in he said like, yeah, I can do it, but like you'll still be there, like if I fall back. And I'm like, I'll always be here, like I still have like a really solid relationship with him, I will always be here and help you, if you ever want to work with me again, that's it, but you've got this. And he went off. I've never talked to you guys since. We do still in contact. I'm actually going to call with him in like 2 hours. And he is now in shape. It's been 2 years. He's still in shape. He's shredded. He is a different person. Like, he's the same person in terms of like who he at his core. But now he lets it. And you can see it in the way that he carries himself, in the way that he his whole demeanor and presence is different. And that has gone on to not just his physical health and his aesthetic, but it has changed his life.
100%. And I think that's something that's so important for people to know. And they might not be too aware of what personal development is. So say if someone is quite new to it, they know that they obviously they might want to go on a fitness journey of some kind, they might want to lose weight, they might want to gain muscle. What would you say 3 mindset tips for people listening could be to get started?
Like, goal setting is important. Like, goal setting is so important. And when it comes to goals, I think we're all quite good at doing like short-term goals, whether it's consciously or not. We all have like important. When goals are too big and too far away, they actually become burdens a lot of the time. Just like, it's like, this is what I want, but I have no idea if I'm getting there or what I'm really doing to achieve it. And I just kind of want to be there one day. And then when you're not there by the year after, in 5 years' time, they just further something to like further like downtrend you and increase that negative self-talk, those limiting beliefs, and that negative self, you know. So I think it's just really important, big goal, and then the way down. And if you carry on, you know, like, here's my goal, like, you really need to break it down. If you keep breaking your goals down, you start to get into the realm of action. And it was breaking those goals down to the action point and then taking action every single day. I'm such a strong believer, this is like a 2 strategy, strong believer in victories. I love mini victories. Victories are so important to success and to productivity because it is so much more motivating to be on a trajectory of success than failure. If you set your goals that are too big, too soon, you drown in it, you know, it just becomes so, so unmotivating. It actually pulls you back. Like, you, again, you're building that sort of negative self-talk, that negative self-identity, belief in yourself. So I think, like, every single mini victory in terms of fitness, I mean that, like, every, like, mini victory. For me, like, this week has been that I open up every day at, like, 7, 8 o'clock. Like, that is such a victory for me. I'm, like, finding it so hard to get up in the morning. I struggle with my sleep. Like, if I get up on time one day, that is a mini victory that I'm, like, 100% going to conflict, whether it be at work or whether it be in your personal life, without letting your fear or your anger or your resentment lead the conversation. That is a mini victory. There are a million different mini victories. Like, mini victories can be so minor and so silly, but to put your energy in this attack. Start putting your energy into gratitude, into noticing all of the victories happening in your life and things that you have to be grateful for. Like, where you put your energy grows, you know? Where you put energy, where you put your focus is what determines that your life is yours and that your energy is yours and the power in your life is also yours. So you have the power to place your energy wisely. Whatever you place your energy will determine the direction of your life. It's really, whether you want to put it down to manifestation or you to just perception, you know, like, you will notice what you focus on the negative all of the time. But there's another thing, and the small things become such big notes. Like, you know, you get and you stamp, what's the word I'm looking for, stub your toe, and oh, things always happen to me. You know, like, we go into the kitchen and the bulbs, like, again, you know, like, oh, why has everything always got to be like a challenge? Why can nothing just run smoothly? It always got, and then throughout your whole day, you're noticing all the ways that it's smoothly. Whereas if you start putting those energy in, and I think that is such like an important, it's such an important thing to recognize, that power and control that you have. You are the driver in your life. Like, you have the power and the control over your destiny and where life takes you. You can't control the world outside of you, but you can control how you react to it. Mm-hmm. You can choose how you react to it. And I think, like, a really strong element of making that the choices more conscious and more benefiting to you and your progress is to really focus on those mini victories and work towards those goals every day, all the time.
Yeah, and making it a part of your life is something I think people find so difficult, obviously, at the beginning. And that's the thing with personal development, these things become habits so that you don't have to think about them anymore. And you start actually...
Everything is habits. Whether they're positive or whether they're negative, we all have habits. We all have strategies and techniques that we use to maneuver ourselves in the world around us, you know? And the thing is that every single person on this planet has faced adversity. Every single one of us has faced adversity. And there is no like leveling in adversity. The worst thing that has ever happened to you is the worst thing that has ever happened to you, regardless of how it compares to the worst thing that happened to somebody else. Okay? Like the worst thing that ever happened to me might be that I had to sell my favorite horse. You know, I might be from a really rich family, and that's the worst thing that ever happened to me. Meanwhile, the worst thing that's ever happened to you is that your mom died of an overdose. Yeah? From an outside perspective, one is way easier, one is way worse. But it doesn't matter, because it's the worst thing that happened to me, and I have not experienced your worst thing. So I don't have anything to relate it to. Every single one of us has faced adversity and difficulty in our life, and we come through with these habits, these strategies, these techniques to maneuver in the world around us. They initially might start out as survival techniques that we need to get us through this experience that we're going through right now. My mom dying of overdose, my horse being sold because I ran out of money. Like, I had to get through that worst thing that happened to me, whatever it was, and I developed the strategies that I needed to survive in that moment. Now, when you come out of that situation, and this is no longer happening, you're not in that grief anymore, the strategies might stay with you. And if they stay with you once the situation has gone, now they're not helping you move forward and out of the situation. They're not keeping you alive and surviving through the hardship. They're now holding you in that zone of survival, in that zone. And surviving is not living. Surviving is not thriving. It is getting through. It is a day to day. And you can't see the big picture when you're surviving. So everything is a habit, whether it's positive or whether it's negative. Like, the good news is that habits can be broken, habits can be rebuilt. Anything that you have learned can be unlearned. So it's, again, it all comes down to self-awareness. You need to learn to be brutally honest with yourself. You need to be able to look inwards deeply in you to be able to sit in the uncomfortable, you know, because avoidance of the uncomfortable won't remove it. Yeah. You're just looking in the other direction. It's still there. You cannot change that which you do not acknowledge.
Absolutely. And I think it's starting on addressing these habits and these things that aren't benefiting you that is the problem for people. And they want to kind of suppress things and push things down. But really, the best thing to do for you to get to where you want, sometimes you can't keep going around it. You've got to deal with it head on. And that's exactly what you're saying. And I think it runs through your work and what you're doing. And obviously, you know, I know that personal development and mindset is so much bigger in nutrition and fitness than people know. And I'm really pleased that you're putting that through in your work, and you're obviously seeing it with benefit for people as well. So, I mean, people probably found this really, really helpful, especially if they're into mindset and personal development as well. And it's been really fantastic hearing what you've got to say about it, which is really, really lovely. So how can listeners find you on social media? How can they follow your journey, and how can they benefit from more information from you?
I'm Cash Whiteley pretty much throughout on Facebook. I think I'm official Cash Whiteley because somebody stole my name. And Instagram is like where I post the most. I do tweet a lot, but my Twitter is definitely like more of a personal vibe. I think it's a great thing. I'd love to have more people on my Twitter, but that's definitely a way to like really get to know like the more personal me rather than like the fitness business me. My Instagram is where it pops off all the time. That's like my primary outlet, my primary focus. I also have a YouTube channel, which I'm currently building. So I'm like building content. I'm not posting at the moment, but I'm strongly editing. I have like a backlog of stuff to post. So you can find me through all of those things. If you follow me on Instagram, Cash Whiteley, I have a free email course that I'm running at the moment, while I'm running ongoingly. Anybody that joins that course will get an email from me every 4 to 5 days, and you will be given, it's completely free, and you're given techniques for training, strategies in terms of your diet and nutrition. But it's, some of it is like practical information about dieting, and some of it's really like mindset stuff about dieting. And of course, there is a big element of personal development in there. It's very much focused on developing those long-term habits, that lifestyle change, so that it's sort of really set into who you are and how you function in life. You know, that's what I'm all about.
That sounds a fantastic opportunity for people. So obviously, if anyone's been listening and you found this helpful, if you've got some little bits from it that you'd like to share with people, please rate, please subscribe, and please obviously share it with friends. Thank you very much for listening, and obviously thank you very much, Cash, for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to everybody listening.